Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Shane Joseph. So, Shane, you finished a new short story collection while you were in Ireland at a writing retreat. Are any of the stories set in Ireland, or were any influenced by your experiences there?
Well, unfortunately not. I was in Ireland for a reason. I wanted to get away from hurly-burly of living here in Canada to complete writing this collection. I was three stories short, and I was never getting to it. So I went to this writing retreat where there was only me, the housekeeper, the cook, and the host in this sprawling house. I had a room all to myself with a view of the bay, and I could write to my heart's content, and when I got bored, I could go down to the pub and have a drink and come back and write more. So that's what I did. I wrote three short stories that were in my head in 6 days. And I thought that was well worth the visit because I couldn't have done it at home.
Right. That's an unusual retreat, isn't it, to be the only retreater?
Yes, I was in retreat. But I did write a fairly extensive article about my visit to Ireland, and it was published in the Sri Lankan Anchorman, a community newspaper down in Toronto, who really liked to publish my travel writing. So it did get published, and an extract from that piece is on the blog site of the retreat, Anamkara, in County Cork. So something happened.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about your historical trilogy. I know you've been writing it for a long time. Have you done a great deal of research for the story?
Yes, in fact, I have. And then that was also the downside, because I was relying too much on research. And until somebody told me, look, this is a love story. This is an adventure story. There's only so much time you have for research, and the rest is up to writing the story. So the book actually, it takes place in three different countries. The first book takes place in France, in Alsace and Lorraine. The second part of the book takes place in South Africa. And the third part takes place in Sri Lanka. So it's around the time of the fall of the Dutch Empire to the British Empire. And my hero goes from all these places while the Dutch flag is falling in each of these places. And he gets to Sri Lanka when it finally falls to the British. And he was considered to be part of the coup that led to the fall of the colony. So I started the book the trilogy in 2010. I wrote the first part. Then I went to Strasbourg and Metz in France, and I walked the streets and got a sense of the place. Then I wrote the second part in 2013 and went to South Africa in 2015, and I walked in the veld and in the Karoo, and I looked at the place, and I did my research. Of course, Sri Lanka is native to me, so I was there last year. I walked ahead of writing the third piece, and I got a sense of the forts and the place, the Dutch forts where most of the action takes place. I'm planning to go back to Sri Lanka again at the end of this year to verify my research. But I sat down to write the book, the third and final part, and I think by the end of February I will have done that. So it's a long 7-8-year-old project that I'm glad is coming to an end, but I had a lot of fun with it.
Well, did it turn out to be based on the life of your ancestor, or has it changed?
Oh, it's changed. I don't even know the life of my ancestor. I only know the historical record of where he came and when he came and what he did and so on. But I don't know what happened in between, so I've let my imagination fly. I don't think anyone can contradict me because nobody was there either. So,
Safe.
Yeah, and I tell you, I mean, I had the outlines of the story before I started it, but how it's turned out has been completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so are you planning to publish all three volumes at the same time?
Well, let me put a little plug to whoever's listening. This one I don't plan to publish through either my publishing house or through a small Ontario publisher. I think this is a commercial volume because it has commercial potential. I see movies, potential for a longer series. I mean, it can go beyond three books because this guy and his partner, who's a woman, they are alive at the end of this trilogy. And they're still young, and they can do things. So I'm hoping that I can find a bigger publishing house who may decide to take this on and expand it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, and of course, if I'm unsuccessful, I told my son, I said, I'll leave it in my will to him, and he can take it and he can change it, and he can try to flog it. Because historical fiction is always current, you know, history has happened, right? So it can be sold 10 years from now, 15 years from now. So that's where I am with those three books.
So what about the other novels you're planning to write? You've decided on topics, as you wrote to us, and we'd like to hear about them and why you chose them, but do you always start your books this way, choosing a topic? Do you write an outline before you begin?
I have a beginning, middle, and an end, but the topics are important because I will not start a book unless a topic interests me. So, for instance, one of the books that we'll talk about a little later is set in a small town, and the intrigues of a small town intrigued me when I moved to Coburg. Another topic that has interested me has been the pharmaceutical industry and some of the shenanigans that have gone on there. I was interested in the robocall scandal that happened in Canada during the election. And so I've actually combined those two into another book, which is also ready. I finished it maybe a year and a half ago. So the topic has to kind of burn me, and then it continues to burn in me. And then the characters that will give it life and make it come alive start to take hold, and then I'll write a book. But
so you take your topic, but where do the characters come from? Do they just walk into your mind?
Some of them do. Some of them are composites of people I've known.
How
mix
do you
them
fit
up.
Them into the topic? I mean, what's the relationship?
Well, they have to be affected by the topic, either a victim of the topic or an antagonist or a protagonist in that situation. I try to match them with the situation. So, for instance, I'll give you an example. In the case of the pharmaceutical story, I had this guy who was a pharmaceuticals executive who had been fired. He then discovers that, you know, he's been treated badly, and then his employers are into some kind of shenanigans that are going on, and he's then therefore determined to right the wrong. So you see, you have the connection of the person who's been wronged, who's now going back to try and solve the problem.
Okay. Good. Well, how about reading? Are you going to read from Milltown?
Or I can read from the opening chapter of Milltown. So it's when the new immigrant has just walked into this town. Sam Salvadore walked the deserted boardwalk and looked out on the lake, frigid under blue March skies, a layer of thin ice suppressing bubbling wavelets brushing up against frozen ones on a beach that looked like dunes with a sprinkling of fresh snow cover. He could smell freedom in this country, in its crisp air, and he inhaled, letting the cold creep inside him, refreshing, numbing, ridding the last of his misgivings about coming to live in a small town, where his foreignness would stick out like that lighthouse at the end of the pier. Out here, he would lose the anonymity of Toronto, where he had been classified as just another ethnic. There were few people out at this mid-hour of the morning, dog walkers and joggers, mostly middle-aged women looking far from trim. An old woman, hunched and bundled in an overlong overcoat, pulled a shopping cart behind her along the boardwalk, a few steps ahead. She walked slowly and labored under her burden. As Sam moved to overtake her, she looked sideways at him over a tightly wrapped scarf. Panic crossed her face and she stumbled, sending the cart and its contents spilling into the snow. Sam instinctively went to her aid, holding out his hand. She looked apprehensively at him, refusing the offered help, mumbling under her breath and looking around for someone else. But no one was in the vicinity. And after jerking her head frantically about her, she reluctantly took his extended hand and let him raise her back to her feet. "Are you hurt?" he asked. "What?" Her voice was croaky and hoarse. "Cigarette smoker," he thought. "Are you all right?" he decided to enunciate slowly. "You speaking English?" He suppressed a smile. "Can I get your things?" She straightened her clothes and felt all over her body for injuries while he righted her cart and returned her spilled groceries into it. Tinned vegetables, a cabbage, bacon, a packet of hot cross buns, two bananas, a box of cereal, and eggs that looked cracked. "I'm afraid your eggs may be broken." "You speak English?" the woman said, shaking her head. She took back possession of her cart and began slowly limping away. "Huh, so much for gratitude," Sam thought. He turned onto the pier and walked down to its end, right up to the lighthouse, where the wind was stronger and the ice broke against the rocks. He turned his back on the wind and looked towards the town. The sun warmed his face. Milltown, population 20,000, and growing rapidly. Church steeples rose over the trees. They were all represented here, Catholic, Anglican, Presbyterian, Baptist, United, even the Jehovah's Witnesses. Marlene would find a home in one of them, having attended a Methodist school back home, even though she was a Buddhist. There was no temple for him, but he had lost his faith in the gods after all that had gone on in Sri Lanka. The town hall stood tall in the downtown core, while evergreens sprouted in between the smaller buildings. By next month, there would be more leaves, as those gaunt stalks sticking out between rows of neat houses on the eastern shoreline, maples, oaks, willows, would burst into bloom. Such sturdy trees, unlike the ones back home. They rarely stirred, no matter how strong the winds howled in this cold country. Sam wondered if that was why Canadians were taciturn and composed, unlike his native countrymen, who let it all hang out and ended up killing each other. The chemical plant and its myriad white buildings ran down to the water on the western edge of the town. Too close to the water, he thought. The plant worried him. Recent newspaper reports in Toronto had focused on this small town. They had cited the rise of cancers in the area. But then, back home, people had died anyway. Taken out of their homes in the middle of the night, asked to say a word in Sinhala, and if accented, doused with gasoline and set on fire. Sam was forced to witness his own house in Colombo go up in flames. The fact that his wife was a Sinhalese and a Buddhist was no exception. It may have spared his life, perhaps, but all their earthly possessions had succumbed to conflagration during that night of terror. He shivered. Was there evil in this country, too? Hidden, perhaps, behind this benevolent townscape.
Thank you very much, Shane.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Shane Joseph, novelist, short story writer, editor, and publisher. And we want to thank him for catching us up on his current work. So where can our listeners buy your book, Shane?
Oh, everywhere good books are sold, I think. Amazon, Indigo, and of course our lovely bookshop, which I'd like to point out in Coburg, Let's Talk Books, mm-hmm. on Coburg Street. They'll be happy to provide you my books.
Good. So, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to us at our website, wordonthehills.com, where all these programs are archived and available to listeners at any time. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week. Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.